Good evening and welcome at KVC Arts, arts and entertainment in our region, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Tonight, wrapping up our series of interviews leading up to a concert April 2nd in Ontario featuring legends of the music of the 50s and 60s. It's a concert featuring Sonny Turner's Platters, Leon Hughes' Coasters, Little Peggy March, Barbara Lewis, Johnny Tillotson, and tonight's guest, the headliner, Pat Boone. We'll hear about his hits, of course, his encounters with Metallica, Alice Cooper, Slash from Guns N' Roses, and more. We're going to start, though, with Emmanuel Rogers with more that same weekend at the Ontario Improv.
Joining us today is actor, comedian, and much more, Christopher Titus. Thank you for joining us today, Christopher. I really appreciate it.
Man, it's so good to be with you guys. It's always a great conversation. You know, the NPR vibe.
Now, you are a very funny man. I've watched a lot of your material over the years. And whether we're talking about Norman Rockwell is Bleeding, Love is Evil, or your new tour, Angry Pursuit of Happiness.
That was the last one. The new one is called Born with a Defect. Though Angry Pursuit of Happiness released on Comedy Central in May, and now we're doing Born with a Defect. And Born with a Defect is, we were all born with a defect because we were all born children. That's where basically the show starts. It's interesting. I woke up one day and thought, how the hell do human beings have the keys to the planet? I mean, if you think about it, every other animal is born with some instincts, some ability. Dolphins swim for a short breath, deer walks in an hour, but a human child needs two adults around it for 5 years so it doesn't choke on a damn Cheerio. Every other animal on the planet is instinctively afraid of fire. Human beings learn about fire by touching fire.
And in my case, twice.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I tell people this show, if you have kids, this show is it's therapy for parents. And if you don't have kids, it's 90 minutes of birth control.
I know your material. I've seen and I've listened. But for our audience, where does your material come from?
Oddly enough, it comes from me having to make a horrible mistake in my life, it seems. It seems like every show I've ever done came from some nightmare that I survived. And the thing is, the Angry Pursuit of Happiness was kind of about how my life had gotten better, and I realized I was content and happy, and it was the scariest moment of my life because nothing in my life has really worked unless I was going through a problem, you know, and I was out of problems. So thank God the world keeps turning and life keeps lifing, and so the problems keep coming.
Yeah, and I noticed you talk about those on ChristopherTitus.com. The Armageddon update is really fascinating to me, and it's like, wow, if you weren't a comedian, somebody might take this seriously and actually accomplish something.
But I always tell people, I'm like, I'm the satanic Tony Roberts. Tony Robbins. You know, I'm up there, I'm doing a seminar to really, kind of an a-hole with a seminar is what my comedy really is.
Okay. Well, I'm going to back off a little bit because I want to talk about something else. And that is the special unit movie that you're scouting for right now.
We're just locking down locations right now. We're doing that this week. We're done. The script's done. Peter Farrelly got involved with it. So especially, the premise is due to the Fairness and Disabilities Act, the LAPD has to hire 4 handicapped undercover detectives. And I play Nick Nolte's mugshot. I play the worst cop in L.A. And so we were trying to get it made because I have a lot of friends that are disabled actors, and they don't, although Hollywood talks a really good game, we love the disabled. They're special little heroes. It's amazing. But at the end of the day, they don't give them any love. They don't give them any help, you know? I wrote this movie to get all these comedians and funny disabled actors a shot. And it's worked out really well, man. It's worked out really well. And so Peter Farrelly got involved. So we did a pilot in 06. They turned it down. Basically, Comedy Central said it was too edgy, which is, that's not the first time I've heard that. So we basically went and I wrote a movie script, and I've been trying to get a finance. Well, I got some guys to kick in some money. So it's low budget, but we're doing it.
Right.
Well, one of the actors, a guy named Michael Aronin, who's an actor and he's got cerebral palsy, he's relentless, man. I do a joke in Voice in My Head where he basically says, disabled people use it against you when they can. So what he does is he gets it out to Jackie Flynn, who knows Peter Farrelly. Peter Farrelly watches the pilot, and all of a sudden, I don't know Peter Farrelly, out of the blue on my phone one night, it says, hey, Peter Farrelly here, what's going on with this movie? And my wife is standing across the counter, and I slam my phone down, and I go, oh, my God, that's Peter Farrelly. Like, I was whispering because I thought maybe he could hear me through his phone. He may have that phone.
Right.
I called Peter Farrelly and talked to him. He read the script, and then he blowtorched it. literally took this script apart like you wouldn't believe. Wow. To the point where I was at a 2-3 hour meetings with him on the phone, and he took every piece of the script apart. And my old me, I would have said, you know what? I am not going to listen to this guy. I've been doing comedy 30 years. I know what I'm doing. But instead, what I did was I was like, you know what? Peter Farrelly did Kingpin, one of my favorite movies, and he's funny. He's made hundreds of millions of dollars for studios. I'm going to listen to him. And I took his advice, and I changed everything he said.
Right.
And I had to rewrite 70 pages out of the 100-page script.
Wow.
It was horrible. It was a lot of work. But at the end, we had a great script. And I think that's the key to making a movie. So now we're on it. We're making the movie.
I'm Emmanuel Rogers, speaking with Christopher Titus, who is appearing at the Ontario Improv April 1st through April 3rd. I hope my audience understands what you said about this. You're taking actors who have been acting as long as acting has been there and giving them the chance to have a spotlight for once.
Right. Well, that's funny, man. It's like it's weird. The reason the movie got written, and by the way, you know, the way I write, it's harsh. It's basically my character is really being a jerk. But the only way I think people can change their minds about something is not through a Hallmark movie. When you watch a Hallmark movie, you expect it.
Right.
When you watch this movie, you're going to think it's going to be one of those radical R-rated comedies. And then by the end of it, you know, we will actually kind of show that, you know, disabled people are... It's weird because it's no one's fault. You know, like when you see a guy in a wheelchair, from the time you're a little kid, I asked Michael Arona, I said, tell me what you would like people to know the most about being disabled. He said, I wish people knew that because you have a physical disability, you don't have a mental disability. I would also like them to stop telling their kids to don't talk to us or don't look at us. Because the parents always tell their kids because they think the kids are going to bother them.
Are they still doing that? Are people still telling their kids, don't look at them?
People are telling their kids, you know, don't bother those people.
Wow.
They're saying, don't talk to them, you know. Not because, and parents are just trying to be nice. They're just trying to be, don't annoy. We always think we're annoying people by saying hi in a wheelchair. You ever notice when you see a guy in a wheelchair, you just look away, kind of? Because you don't want to bother him. You don't want to, oh, my God, I don't want to stare.
Right.
Well, just say hi, you know. And part of the reason I wanted to do this movie is because I was in San Diego about a year ago. And I was walking across the street. And there's this woman in a wheelchair, and she had her bag in front of her, and she was just looking depressed. And it was a bright, sunny day, and I was crossing the street, and she looked down, and she had one leg. She was just sitting there bummed out. And I said, hey, how you doing, kid? And this woman looked up at me, and she didn't say hi. She said, thank you. And that got to me. I was like, wow. Like, you are so, like, marginalized, and people don't notice you,
right,
that you had to say thank you for me just saying hi. So now we're going to let these people just, you know, be just ruckus funny. And the, you know, the movie will hopefully come out next year.
Wow, I hope so, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Funny first. I mean, you know, like, I don't want to change the world. I'm not Gandhi, trust me. But funny, it's going to be ridiculously funny. I had one guy actually read it and say, it's too edgy. I can't work on this. I was like, good. If it doesn't make somebody angry, then I haven't pushed it far enough.
And when you say it's too edgy and Comedy Central passed it up, that actually surprised me because I watched Comedy Central.
It's weird about comedy. Here's about comedy. Is that Comedy Central, they're fine with you talking about penises or sex or drugs or all these other things that are really destroying society. You know, they're making it really lowbrow. But if you start talking about disabilities or the LGBT community in any kind of funny way,
right,
the PC button gets pressed and everybody just flips out. Now, it took them a long time. We walked the right edge. It took them 8 months to say no to the pilot originally. So, you know, and also, that was also 2006 when things were a little bit different. They were going, you know, we think it's too edgy. And I go, it's South Park. I go, you guys are way edgier in South Park. And they said, that's a cartoon, Titus. That was the excuse.
Okay. So that made it better. I got it. You're appearing at the Ontario Improv from Friday, April 1st through Sunday, April 3rd.
Yep.
I'd like to know, what is the attraction for you in doing stand-up comedy?
It's my job. Yeah. You know, all this movie stuff, TV stuff, whatever. That's, you know, you got a million people jumping in, and you got executives giving notes, and you got line producers. But when I get on that stage stand-up, man, that's me. I get to do second to second, moment to moment, instant to instant. I have to be on my game, and that's what I love about it. And that's why I write a new show every year or 18 months. George Carlin did 14 specials and 21 albums, and, you know, I got a long way to go to hit that.
I'm Emmanuel Rogers, and I'm talking with Christopher Titus, who is appearing at the Ontario Improv April 1st through April 3rd. I'm going to tone it down a little bit because I want to ask about something that's special to you. You are the founder of the Insight Youth Project, a nonprofit organization. What is this organization about, and how can people help?
You know, we were reading in the paper and stuff about all these different charities that they made $300 million, only 4% went to the charity or whatever. So I kind of got mad about that, and I decided to start my own charity. So what we do is every couple of years or every year, depending on how we can make it work out, we do a comedy show. I get all the comics to volunteer. I get everybody to donate food and everything. We run a theater, and we raise money. And we raise money for anybody who helps students, homeless kids between, like, 8 and 18. Because that's the weird year where everybody starts to go, oh, my God, you're an adult now. Move on. So what we do is we do the show, and then we actually give every dime. We have no staff. Everybody's volunteer. And every single dime goes to the organization we picked that year. And I pick different organizations every year, too. I kind of want it to really be local charity. There's a lot of people that come out to Hollywood, kids, because they want to be famous, and they get here, and next thing you know, they're on the street tricking, and it's just not working out for them. So any organization that takes care of those kids, we help out.
All right. Will you tell us the name of the organization again and how they can get in contact with it?
It's called the Insight Youth Project. We're probably going to be doing another show here in L.A. in about 3 months.
And they can find out more about this on your website, ChristopherTitus.com?
We're doing on the donation page now. We're working on that now.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, because we do need more people just to stay. You know what? Forget about talking about it. Let me do something. Thanks, Christopher.
Right.
Early on in your career, you spoke a lot about your parents. How has your mom and dad helped you in comedy?
My dad helped me by just being him.
Okay.
My dad, he died in 2001, and he's every show I write, he still seems to be a major piece of it. You know, I learned so much from him, good and bad. And my mom, I had such a weird upbringing. People go, how did you end up like that? How did you end up okay? And I don't think I am. I just think it's because I did a thing called Landmark Forum, which is an amazing, just a 3-day seminar, and it kind of puts it all in perspective that your past is your past and get over it. Right. And once I did that, I could really see, you know, my dad's alcoholism, my dad's abuse, and my mom's mental illness as absurd instead of as something that destroyed my life. So that's how it worked out, man. I wrote jokes like, my mom is crazy. I don't mean my mom's crazy. I mean, we, the jury, find the defendant. My parents' divorce settlement involved a bar tab. I mean, you know, once you can make fun of it, it stops being this heavy weight in your life and basically just becomes jokes.
Well,
you remember I wrote Norman Rockwell in 96. We were at a deal for a TV show by 98, and we're on the air, you know, by 2000. So, it worked out. But when we turned that script in with those jokes in it to the network, man, they were like, are people even going to get this?
Right.
And what I've learned over the years, if I just keep telling my story, I'm telling everybody's story.
You know, we talked a little bit, just very little, about you having a show called Titus. And in your comedy routine, Voice in My Head, you talk about how the show came to be canceled. Would you mind sharing a little bit of that with our audience, how it came to be canceled,
well,
and what would
what
you
I've
do
learned.
Differently
Never
today?
Take a comedian to the network meeting. That's what I've learned. So we're on there on our third season. We're getting to start our third season. Everything's going really well. The views are great. The numbers are good. And then we sit there with a new president. The new president says, all right, here's how I want you to change the show. Now, you got to remember, she was talking to a guy who'd been on this stage by himself since he was 18 doing what he wanted.
Right.
Now you're going to tell me in one meeting how to change the show that's already been successful for 2 years. So she wanted me and the actor to cheat on each other in the script, and me and my girlfriend in the show, which we already did in episode 4. And here's my mistake. First of all, again, don't take me to a meeting. Just don't take me to a meeting. Just you guys go, come back and tell me, I'll punch a wall and we'll be fine.
Right.
So what happens is she goes, I want you to split up. And I looked right in the face and I said, do you even watch the show? So let me explain to you how this show works. Now, not the best way to start talking to a network president, because it turns out if you tell your boss they're stupid long enough, they will fire you.
Yeah.
So I told her, I said, first of all, the show is this. It's two people screwed up, dysfunctional, together make a solid couple. That's what it's about. If I split them and have them cheat on each other, then they're just like every other scumbag on the planet. And the show's over, the audience won't trust us, and it stops being funny. So we're done.
Right.
But guess what? We're not doing it. And I thought, everybody's going to leap ahead like Gladiator. You know, are you not entertained? I thought people were going to go, yeah, Titus, you tell her. Then the room got deathly quiet. And I literally saw the thermostat lower itself. And then a tumbleweed blew across the table. And I actually, in my head, I heard Clint Eastwood's voice, well, that was pretty stupid. And the network president very coldly looks at me across the table and says, fine, do what you want. The next day, all promo stopped. The next day, every commercial we had on the books, gone.
Wow.
And the numbers, then they moved us. They moved us to another date and didn't tell anybody. Didn't notify that we moved. The numbers went down, and then people found it again, and the numbers came back up. And then they moved us again, except it was like Sunday at 3 a.m. And I just learned to shut the hell up. That's what I learned. It only cost me $30 million. I'm fine.
Wow. That's a heck of a lesson.
Yeah, it's a very expensive lesson. I'm glad my dad was dead because he would have killed me.
You know, it's hard for me to even continue talking about it because I looked for the show, too. I was one of those people in the audience that said, okay, it came on this time. Where's it?
Right, what happened? And they summarily just kind of let it go. And it's interesting because that woman who did that got fired from Paramount for being impossible to work with. That doesn't change anything, you know, that I should have shut up. But at least I felt I had a little bit of like, good, yeah.
There you go. That's the attitude, man. We're with you. Yeah. You know, I had forgotten that you were actually in a movie called Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Yeah, keep forgetting that. Keep forgetting it. Keep forgetting it. Just keep forgetting it. Don't remember it ever again.
But I have to ask, because it's still out there. You do know that, right? They're still showing
this
movie.
Yeah, people, just to make me mad, because I've talked about it on the podcast, they bring the copies of the DVD and have me sign it. And I always sign something horrible on it. You know, I sign something, I write something about their mothers, and I said, never bring this to me again. And they all laugh. They think it's hilarious.
Well, I think I'm going to use that in my promo for the show so we can get some people coming to Ontario with their copies.
All right.
Christopher, before you take off on us, and I know you're a busy man, I really want my audience to know something about what you do, and that's the Armageddon update. Can you tell them just a little bit about what that's about and where they can find it?
You know, well, the media goes after so hard with all the news. So basically every week on the Titus podcast, which you can also get on iTunes, I take whatever's going on in the news and just shred it for about 4 to 5 minutes.
Right.
And that's the Armageddon update.
All right. Well, thank you for your time.
Thanks, man.
I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, brother.
You're welcome, and I'll be at the show.
All right. Talk to you. See you next week then. Bye.
All right. Take care.
Once again, Christopher Titus at the Ontario Improv, April 1st through the 3rd. ChristopherTitus.com for his tour schedule, the Armageddon update, and more. Coming up that same weekend on April 2nd, a six-act concert of music of the 50s and 60s with Sonny Turner's Platters, Leon Hughes' Coasters, Little Peggy March, Barbara Lewis, Johnny Tillotson, and our next guest, the headliner, Pat Boone. As KBC Arts continues, we'll hear about Pat's encounters with Metallica, Alice Cooper, and Slash from Guns N' Roses. We'll even hear about some of his own music. That's just ahead.
Hi, I'm Isabella, and here's what's happening in your region. Thursday, March 31st at 3 p.m. and 4:30, the La Sierra Library in Riverside will be showing Mockingjay Part 1. Cost is free. For more information, visit riverside.gov. Thursday, April 7th, from 6 p.m. to 7:30, in the Riverside Central for Social Justice and Civil Rights, the Liebert Cassidy Whitmore film series on the role of law in America's society continues at the center on April 7th with the showing of Brick by Brick, a civil rights story at 6 p.m. and 7:45. Admission is free, but seating is limited. For more information, visit riverside.gov. Saturday, April 16th, is the 4th Annual Tomale Festival. It will take place at White Park Riverside from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Enjoy family fun and tamales. For more information, visit eventbrite.com. Thank you for listening. This is 91.9 KVCR.
I'm Antonia Gonzalez, anchor of National Native News. Our news service features stories for both Native and non-Native people. Tune in as we examine healthcare, culture, education, legislation, and other issues. Join me for National Native News weekday afternoons at 3:01 on KVCR.
You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. We're streaming live at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming.
You made me cry when you said goodbye, ain't that a shame? My tears fell like rain.
Coming up April 2nd in Ontario, a concert featuring the Coasters with Leon Hughes, Sonny Turner's Platters, Little Peggy, Barbara Lewis, Johnny Tillotson, and our next guest, Pat Boone.
You broke my heart when you said we'll part, ain't that a shame?
With a career spanning over 50 years, Pat Boone has given us pop rock and R&B covers, gospel, music of, by, and for Chevrolet, and even a touch of heavy metal. There's a lot to choose from with Pat.
Farewell, goodbye, although I'll try. Ain't that a shame? My tears fell like rain.
I think I'd actually like to lead off with you on this. What you go through post-interview, you know, marveling at the little slice that a person focuses on. You've got so much experience in a variety of things, and people focus on this, that, or the other for a different slice in a short amount of time. Do you ever really wonder about, wow, they jumped from this to that to the other?
No, I understand, because my wife thinks that she's married to three people or four, and wishes three of them would get lost.
Uh-oh.
I'm too eclectic. I get involved in too many things. And so people want to know about this or that or the other thing, and I can answer because I am involved. But anyway, I understand.
Well, we've got you coming to the area soon, along with Barbara Lewis and Little Peggy, Johnny Tillotson, Sonny Turner from the Platters says hello, by the way, and also Leon Hughes with the Coasters.
One of my favorite groups ever.
Several of them talked about what a wonderful reunion it would be, and it's been maybe 20 or more years, but they're looking forward to seeing you. And this is truly, truly.
We're the survivors. Yeah. We're the survivors.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Leon is the last of the original members. Sonny is, again, a last of the original members under the Buck Ram era. And all that kind of thing. You then, I've got Pat Boone on the phone, so some of your earliest hits, you know.
One heart's not enough, baby. Two hearts make you feel crazy. One kiss makes you feel so nice. Two kisses put you in paradise. Two hearts, two kisses make one love.
Maybe even the first, Two Hearts, Two Kisses, and Ain't That a Shame. These were released as singles. Were they then also on your first album released, what, maybe a year later?
Yeah, there was, I think my first million-selling album was Pat's Great Hits. You know, that's what all artists who had multiple hit recordings did. You know, you put out a Great Hits album. Two Hearts, Two Kisses, Ain't That a Shame, and then the next was At My Front Door. Crazy little mama come knocking at my front door, and then G. Whitaker's. It was an attempt by some songwriters to do some rock and roll, but use old-time slang, and I did it. It was a million seller because the first three were million sellers, and you know there was a momentum. But then the next was, if I remember correctly, Tutti Frutti or I'll Be Home, or I Almost Lost My Mind. I mean, these were all million sellers. Several, in fact. You won't know this, surely. I mean, who does? I didn't. I lived it, and I didn't know it. But from March of 55 to February of 56, 11 months, just before Elvis hit with Heartbreak Hotel, I had 6 million-selling singles.
Oh, my gosh.
Two of them number one in 11 months. Now, that doesn't seem possible. I didn't know it had happened until I was writing an autobiography. And somebody had to do the statistical research for me. I had not kept up with it. And I said, this must be wrong. I mean, nobody even puts out 6 singles in 11 months. Well, one was a two-sided hit. I think it was Tutti Frutti and I'll Be Home, maybe back-to-back or something.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I still haven't kept up with it. But the stats show that there were 6 million-selling singles, 2 of them number ones in 11 months, which, of course, helped me to weather the Presley avalanche when it happened.
Yeah, right.
Starting in February of 56. We stayed friends and friendly competitors then for the next, well, till he died.
Two hearts, two kisses, make one love. Crazy little mama coming, knocking at my front door. Crazy little mama coming, knocking at my front door.
You're listening to KBC Arts. We're in conversation with Pat Boone, coming to Gardner Spring Auditorium in Ontario April 2nd, along with Sonny Turner's Platters, Leon Hughes' Coasters, Little Peggy March, Barbara Lewis, and Johnny Tillotson. For more information, visit affordablemusicproductions.com.
Crazy little mama coming.
knock, knock, knocking, just like she did before.
Just like she did before.
Don't forbid me to hold you tight.
I actually have a listing somewhere in this stack of papers next to me that I'm trying not to shuffle through with a microphone next to me, but it looks at one point like you were putting out at least one album every year, and then, sometimes even three or so. Yes, and I was wondering...
Because I was doing Kim albums and great hits albums and movie themes, and I mean, I love to record. Randy Wood knew if you put out an album, it would sell. It's on Dot Records. And so why not put out another album?
Okay.
I was for it. We kept doing it.
So you were just recording all the time. It's not like you were there for a bunch of time.
I loved it.
Okay.
Yeah, there's such a magic about it. You go in a studio, you get introduced to a song, and this is something that Chris Isaacs couldn't believe when I told him one of his favorite songs of my hits was Don't Forbid Me. And I told him that I heard that song at the session. The musicians were putting their instruments away because we only had about 35 minutes left in the session, and what was the point of starting another? If we didn't get three finished records in 3 hours, we felt we were throwing money away.
Right.
So we only had 35 minutes left, and Billy Vaughn, who was, you know, arranging and helping pick the song, said, "Oh, Pat," he said, "sorry we didn't get to this. You'd like it. It's got some low notes in it." And I said, "Well, play it for me." He started playing it on the piano. I ran in the control room, asked Randy to please have the musicians get their instruments out again. He said, "We've only got 30 minutes. I said, "Randy, this song will pay for the whole session."
Don't forbid me.
We did go a half hour over, but we recorded the whole song, Don't Forbid Me, from the moment I first heard it till we had a finished record in 1 hour. Now, the recording business is not like that now, and Chris Isaac just could not believe it, but there was an excitement about it, and everybody just pitched in, and sure, there's some clams, some bad notes, but who cared? It was a hit record.
Wow. That's one of those, you only hear about those every so often.
But there was a spontaneity to it. You know, there was an excitement to it. I just heard it. I was literally learning it as I sang it. And so were the musicians, but they were professionals. And I guess I had become something of a professional by then. So, I mean, when we got through with that half hour overtime, we knew we had something. And sure enough, it was a million seller.
Nice.
And I plan to do that. I'm going to do that and all these, well, as many as I can get in at our reunion. You know, when is it?
April 2nd in Ontario.
April 2nd, yeah.
Let me fill your little heart with love. 'Cause it's cold, so don't forbid my desire. It's so cold.
The focus for this concert coming up is 50s and 60s music, but while I've got you on the phone, I may never be able to ask you again about the 1997 release, Pat Boone in a Metal Mood. Okay, so just to put it in perspective, I'm 50, and I know a lot of your early songs because of my mom's At the Hop type records and stuff like that.
Say your prayers, little one. Don't forget my son to include everyone.
Pat Boone in a Metal Mood, I remember this. I remember you in the leather vest coming out in talk shows and all this. So my mom got Love Letters in the Sand, and I got this.
You got Smoke on the Water.
No More Mr. Nice Guy.
Sandman.
Oh, my gosh,
City.
Exit
lights. Enter.
And I have to admit, I saw it initially as a parody album, and then you later even said that it was a bit of a parody of yourself.
Actually, that was attributed to me, but that's not true.
I'd love the real story.
I was serious about the music, because that was the idea.
Something's wrong, shut the light. Heavy thoughts tonight, and they aren't a Snow White.
I was in England with my musicians. They've been with me for 10 years. It's been like 30 now.
Mm.
And so we were between planes. And the guys were just sitting around. I said, you know, we enjoy playing your hit songs from the 50s and 60s. Everybody, the audiences love them. We enjoy them. But why don't we go in a studio and do something, you know, just us together, do something new? And I said, don't you think I've thought of that? I'd love it. I'd pay for it. But what can I do? I haven't done 10 times already. I've done rock and roll. I've done country. I've done gospel. I've done patriotic songs. I've done movie themes. I mean, it would just be ho-hum another album. And they said, well, you never did any heavy metal. And so, of course, we laughed at that thought.
Crazy. Hey, but that's how it goes.
But then we kept kidding about when are we going to go in the studio and do our heavy metal album. Well, my conductor, Dave Siebels, one day said, you know, we've been kidding about this, but you know, there's some really good songs that are only known as heavy metal songs. And if we did them a different way, you know, we'd introduce them to another whole audience. I said, well, what kind of songs are you talking about? So he said, and he mentioned some, which I didn't know. And I said, well, look, make me a cassette at that time, maybe a CD. And I said, let me hear some of the songs you're talking about.
I'm going off the rails on a crazy train. I'm going off the rails on a crazy train.
And I said, by the way, how do you think we would do them differently? He said, well, I'm thinking big band jazz.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he got me then. I thought, oh, hey, I've done some jazz stuff and jazz flavored things. Even written some songs with some jazz hits. So anyway, we decided we would try that because when I began to hear some of the songs, I hadn't heard Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven. I never paid any attention to it. I hadn't listened to anything of Ozzy Osbourne or Guns N' Roses or any of those artists because the heavy metal slammer and the apparently angry shouting, screaming lyrics and loud discordant music, all this stuff, it didn't appeal to me, so why would I even know about it? But when I heard the songs underneath all the noise, I thought, oh, there's some good songs. Even Ozzy Osbourne's Crazy Train is legitimate social commentary.
Truly,
you know,
truly.
About how hard it is for kids to figure out what's right and what isn't amidst all the double standards, hypocrisy, and so on. I'm going off the rails on Crazy Train.
Pat Boone will be at Gardner Spring Auditorium in Ontario April 2nd with Leon Hughes Coasters, Sonny Turner's Platters, Little Peggy March, Barbara Lewis, and Johnny Tillotson. Tickets and information at affordablemusicproductions.com. As KBC Arts continues, more on the album of heavy metal covers, No More Mr. Nice Guy, and speaking of which, with the assistance of Dick Clark, how he surprised and even shocked Alice Cooper.
I'm going off the rails on a crazy train.
Did you ever think Pat Boone could shock and, to a certain extent, even trade places with Alice Cooper?
I got a bad reputation.
You were a teeny sensation.
And I don't know why. I brush my hair, I brush my teeth, I go to church. I'm a really nice guy.
That's up in just a few moments as we hear about Pat Boone deciding to do an album of heavy metal covers.
So we decided we were going to do this.
I used to be such a sweet, sweet thing till they got a hold of me.
When MCA, where all my, well over 1,200 of my songs reside, they said, hey, Bruce Reznikoff called and said, are you planning a heavy metal album? I said, yeah. Well, it should be here, you know, with the rest of your catalog.
I'm getting real shot down and I'm feeling me.
Nice guy. And I said, well, are you interested? So we wound up with two producers, a rock producer, Mike Lloyd, and a big band producer, Jeff Weber. And then we called together the top big band arrangers in the business and gave each of them one heavy metal song that had already been a huge hit and said, I want you to do a big band jazz version of this song. It's already been a million sellers, so you're dealing with a quality hit, but do it a different way.
So, no more Mr. Nice Guy, no more Mr. Clean, no more Mr. Nice Guy, he's sick, he's obscene.
And since each of these top arrangers had only one song and looked around and saw who the other arrangers were, their peers, they didn't want to be the guy who came up with the lamest arrangement. So each one gave me a great, great arrangement of every song. And when I went on the American Music Awards, Dick Clark had just heard the album. He thought it was going to be a hit because the songs were all very familiar classic things, but done in a very exciting new way. It was his idea that Alice Cooper and I, because I'd done his No More Mr. Nice Guy,
right,
come on, and he would wear a V-neck sweater, white buck shoes, his hair pulled back under a cap with a glass of milk, and I would come out in leather and tattoos and choker and boots and shades and earrings and, you know, and be a heavy metal dude, and we would swap images. Well, at the last minute, at the Shrine, literally a half hour before we were to go on stage, Cooper backed out.
Oh.
He said, I'm not going to do it. I just don't feel right coming out in white shoes and carrying a glass of milk. I feel silly. And so I was there in a tuxedo in the dressing room at the moment. But he was backing out of what we told Dick Clark we would do. And the dialogue on the teleprompter was built around that.
Yeah.
So I said, well, I didn't tell him, but I just made up my mind I was going to do it. So I went downstairs, I put on all the outfit, and I was taking some pleasure in shocking the king of shock rock when he introduced me, not knowing what I was going to look like when I came out, because he hadn't seen it. And when I came out on that show, and the crowd went crazy, and it was so cacophonous, the noise was, you couldn't talk anyway, so I walked out to the edge of the stage and flexed my pecs at the audience, and like De Niro and Taxi Driver, yay, you talking to me? You want a piece of this? And then went back and went into the dialogue with Cooper, whose jaw was hanging open. And then we gave the award for Hard Rock Heavy Metal to Metallica, and they'd heard my version of Enter Sandman, the night before, and they came up bowing to me, calling me their new lead singer.
Oh, well, no way.
I was getting the biggest kick out of it. I was not lampooning or parodying the music or myself.
Well, we all came out to Montreux on the Lake Geneva shoreline.
Okay.
But it was Dick Clark's idea that we swap images. And there's humor in that, of course. Well,
yeah,
that humor got me kicked off Christian TV immediately.
Yeah, yeah.
And it took 2 months to get the story straightened out that there was nothing wrong with the music,
right,
any of the songs, that it was all good. Really, really roaring good big band jazz. Everywhere I go now, every appearance I make, even in Israel, I just got back from Tel Aviv, and I sang Smoke on the Water for the Tel Aviv audience. And the sound guys, they all know. Whoever's working in sound on the live performances has my album of No More Mr. Nice Guy or Pat Boone in a Metal Mood, and they know I'm not kidding about the music. They're quality songs. We did them in a very high-quality way. But I knew there was humor in me coming out as a heavy metal rocker. And that was the fun, not making fun of the music or even myself, but just have it like you go to a Halloween party, wear a costume. That's what it was to me. But music critics, I must say, even Hilburn and others who should be able to divine what the intent is, they acted like I was trying to be a heavy metal rocker. I wasn't. I was just trying to do justice to some really good songs.
It's like me trying to be a platter. Yeah.
Only you. Oh, yeah.
A fire in the sky. Smoke on the water.
Yeah. Well, what of those songs? Again, you had top arrangements on all of them, and I wish I had the listing in front of me, but I know you had folks like Dweezil Zappa and Tom Scott, yeah. Killer saxophone, yeah. And jazz.
And Sheila E.
Sheila E.,
and
yeah,
great
that's
drummer,
right.
Greg Bissonette, one of the great drummers of all time in hard rock, heavy metal, and big band. That's why he was our drummer, but we added Sheila E. And these great arrangers like Sammy Nestico, who Count Basie and Frank Sinatra. Fabulous arrangers. And when we had a meeting at Michael Lloyd's house across the street from where I live, explaining this, and none of them, each of them, I swear some of them were coming over with paper bags over their heads or their collars pulled up. They didn't want anybody to know that they might be participating in an album of Pat Boone singing heavy metal. But when they heard the idea, and they looked around and saw that each of these great other arrangers were going to be doing something, then they figured, well, I better give it my best shot, which is what I asked them to do. And each one only had one song to arrange, but each one was a huge hit. I'm trying to think who wrote the arrangement for Paradise City. Slash was going to play on my record, but he and Guns N' Roses were trying to get back together at that point, and so he backed out. And later, when he heard the record, he said, "You do it faster than we do." He said, "I don't know if I could have played it that fast." Well, you're talking to Slash.
That's right, right. We'll never forget. Smoke on the water, a fire in the sky.
I found my thrill on Blueberry Hill, on Blueberry Hill, when I found you.
But anyway, that was a great experience for me. And then, you know, I'm not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because the powers that be there, mainly Jan Winter, Rolling Stone, they make up their minds about who they think ought to be there. And for me, this was full circle, coming back to the days when I recorded rhythm and blues, hits that were not getting played on pop radio.
Right.
Recorded those songs. They then did go to pop radio in my version, and even Little Richard and Fats eventually acknowledged that my records of their songs introduced them to a far larger audience than they had any access to. And so those songs became huge. Really, I just sang Ain't That a Shame in Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
So, after all these years, these songs are classics, and I'm very proud of the fact that I helped them become classics. The thing you probably do know is that in that time, in the mid-50s into the late 50s, rhythm and blues had its own genre. It was its own genre of music, stations, charts, artists.
Yeah, it was truly divided, black and white at that point.
The only ones that are known today are the ones that were covered by somebody. Whether it was me, Elvis, Georgia Gibbs, who did Tweedledee-Dee, I turned it on Rock With Me, Henry. I couldn't do that, and Randy wouldn't want me.
Yeah, the crew cuts, taking the platter stuff.
Yeah, that was an era where there was a huge transition going on. And Jesse Jackson said recently that he thought Pat Boone did more for race relations through my music than any other singer. Now, this is Jesse Jackson talking.
Yeah.
Because I was a white guy from Nashville, not only recording these songs and having big hits, but acknowledging and liking the original performers. Mm-hmm. Like Little Richard and Fats and the Flamingos. And he said Pat Boone was making our music and our artists palatable and acceptable to a much larger audience that didn't want to have anything to do with us. So, I mean, I didn't say that. He did.
Right.
And he stunned me when he said it. And I don't know that I agree. But at least it was nice to hear it from an expert as astute as Jesse Jackson.
And I would not have expected that. That would have just knocked you over with a feather kind of event.
It did.
Gosh,
I jabber on. I'm sorry.
No, that was fascinating, Pat. These are things that I couldn't be reading about somewhere.
You're part of me still. For you were my thrill.
Boone will be in Ontario April 2nd at Gardner Spring Auditorium, along with Sonny Turner's Platters, Leon Hughes Coasters, Little Peggy March, Barbara Lewis, and Johnny Tillotson. Information and tickets at affordablemusicproductions.com. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. We are online and on mobile devices at kvcrnews.org.
Well, it's Saturday night and I just got paid. Fool about my money, don't try to save. My heart says go, go, have a time. It's Saturday night and baby, I feel fine. I'm gonna rock it up. Ooh, I'm gonna rip it up. I'm gonna shake it up. I'm gonna break it up. I'm gonna lock it up at the ball tonight.
One more thing about the now, enough with the heavy metal.
Yeah, I do want to talk about the show coming up.
Yeah, that's right.
I really am looking forward to this reunion. Most of us have been together at one time or another over the years, and I don't know if any of us would have predicted that we might truly be together and still singing and performing for audiences who were paying to see us 50 years later. I remember when the Beatles and the Stones both said, well, we don't want to be singing rock and roll when we're 40. Well, they're 70 now. I'm 80.
Yeah.
And we're still singing, and the music has become classic. So I'm going to be doing all my hits, and they're doing theirs, and we're going to have a ball.
I'm going to rip it up. I'm going to shake it up. I'm going to break it up. Yeah. At the ball tonight. Yeah, I'm gonna rock it up. I'm gonna rip it up. I'm gonna shake it up. I'm gonna break it up. I'm gonna lock it up. At the ball tonight. You made me cry when you said goodbye, ain't that a shame? My tears fell like rain. Ain't that a shame? You're the one to blame.
So we could easily guess at some, but what are at least a few of the hits you know that you have to include for this kind of concert? Do you have a typical opener or something that grabs people every time?
Well, sometimes Rip It Up, even though that was not a hit for me.
No.
But more often, I will open with Ain't That a Shame, because it was my second record.
Oh.
The first record, you mentioned Two Hearts, Two Kisses.
Right.
That was my first, and it was a million seller, but not as well remembered as Ain't That a Shame. So Ain't That a Shame, I've discovered, is a great way to open my part. And then I'll do Love Letters in the Sand and April Love and Don't Forbid Me and Moody River and I Almost Lost My Mind and of course I've got to do Speedy Gonzales.
Yeah, of course.
And you know, I've got rock tunes. I just had my arranger, Dave Siebels, my dear friend, write me a new arrangement of Blueberry Hill because I just wanted to sing it again.
Okay.
And it was not my hit, I recorded it, but Fats and Satchmo both had the big worldwide hits, but I just wanted to sing the song again, so I think I'm going to include Blueberry Hill as well.
How about Drive Away in a Chevrolet?
See the USA. I may drive down in a Chevrolet.
Oh, that's it. That's it. Okay. Pat, a website perhaps where people can get more on you. We spoke of such a fraction of what's going on with you and what you have to offer. Is there one all-inclusive site, or is there a site for your books and your film and radio guys?
I have spread out a little social media. I was slow to get going, and I really needed somebody to help me. I was not really up on how it all worked, but patboone.com is the real,
easy enough.
Shouldn't be a surprise, it's patboone.com. But then Google, man, and Facebook, and Twitter. I mean, I'm on all those, and I've got people helping me. PatBoone.com will direct you to any and everything else.
Okay. Well, fantastic. And that's a nice, easy way to wrap. And gosh, I really have to say I'm truly looking forward to this concert. And I also have to say I do this a lot, but it's a privilege to be able to speak with folks like yourself. And today was a real treat.
I hope you're coming back maybe afterwards and we can shake hands.
I really hope so. I would appreciate that.
You can see me up close and put the light, hey, you haven't changed a bit.
Oh, that's right.
Take
that's
another
right.
look.
That's right.
But 81, I'm grateful to be still playing singles tennis and working out at the gym and took a big swim this morning and ride my bike. I mean, I'm in very, very good shape. And I sang well in Tel Aviv, got the biggest ovation of my whole life.
Wow.
After I closed with Exodus.
Yeah, you wrote the lyrics on that one, yeah.
Yeah, and I just stood there for a long time, finally in tears. They just wouldn't quit, applauding, stamping their feet, you know, bop, 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 bop with their hands. I had to just finally ask them, please, I have one more song I want to sing. Anyway, look, this was fun. I enjoy talking about it, and maybe I'll see you there.
Looking
Ontario,
forward to
it. And it won't be a shame.
Wonderful. Thank you, Pat. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Hey, bye.
Pat Boone will be in Ontario April 2nd at Gardner Spring Auditorium along with Sonny Turner's Platters, Leon Hughes Coasters, Little Peggy March, Barbara Lewis, and Johnny Tillotson. Tickets and information at affordablemusicproductions.com. And that's just about going to wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks once again to Pat Boone as well as to Sid Robinson for his help in setting up these interviews leading up to this concert in Ontario. Thanks again to Christopher Titus at the Ontario Improv April 1st through the 3rd. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Lindsay Weisgarber, Isabella Salinas, Sula Ahmad, Emmanuel Rogers, and General Manager Alfredo Cruz. Beyond the music of Pat Boone on tonight's program, music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, behind us now, for example, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks once again to Sean as well. You can hear many past KVC Arts programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.